From Paul's house and Storm's house, it's Paul and Storm talk about some stuff for 5 to 10 minutes, on average.
I'm Bill.
I'm Storm, and we're going to be talking about some stuff for 5 to 10 minutes on average. It is Thursday evening, August 13th, 2009. It is show 052. We have 208 minions in the Paul and Storm Brigade of Minions, and you did not hear incorrectly. That was Bill. That was not Paul. Paul is on vacation. He is off at the beach doing his vacation thing and leaving me by myself, which makes me sad. But it makes me happy because Bill is Bill Corbett. And if you do not know him by name, you should. If you do, then you know that he is, along with Mike Nelson and Kevin Murphy, the driving creative force behind RiffTracks.com. And before that, Mystery Science Theater 3000. Bill, welcome to the Talking About Stuff Emporium.
Thanks, Storm. Great to be here.
And for you folks out there, this is all fresh for you, but this is, in fact, our third pass. we've each had some technical difficulties. I think we're over it. At home, if you want to break a blender or something, just to kind of get the vibe we're working with here, you'll know where it's at. So how are you doing this evening?
I'm doing good. How are you?
I'm fantastic.
You missing your partner?
I am. We've been a creative team for a very long time and doing this podcast for, well, this is the 52th week that it's been done. Mm-hmm. I'll say I do. And it's a little discouraging. I'm going to go with that as a word because it says how odd it feels to be doing this podcast with anyone other than Paul.
Yeah.
But I will say of the people that I would like to be doing the podcast with, obviously you're at the top of the list because you're here right now.
Well, shucks.
Now, for anybody who doesn't know already what RiffTracks.com is, you should. The best description that I think came from your website at one point was imagining if your three funniest friends were sitting on the couch with you at home watching a movie and just cutting up the whole time.
Yes, and then they passed out and then we took their places.
That's a great business model.
Well, yeah, I'm all about the forward momentum and I'm about the big sale here.
Yeah.
It's RiffTracks has been great fun. We Mystery Science Theater was over 10 years ago now, or just about 10 years ago, was the last thing we shot. And we've been doing this now for about 3 years, and at first it was kind of uncertain, you know, is this going to kind of be our thing? Because we had cast about for other projects for a while, the three of us, and we did a pilot for NPR, and mm-hmm. it almost went, but didn't quite make the hurdle there. A couple of other things, we did a website, and we did the film crew for a while, but that got kind of gummed up by businessy stuff. Mm-hmm. And this thing just keeps chugging on, despite our bad faith. Or lack of faith.
Now, 3 years, it's actually pretty amazing. Like, now it seems like people are much more used to doing something like buying an MP3 online and then syncing it up with the DVD, as you do with RiffTracks. Like, it almost seems normal now. Did you find it hard to get people to catch on to that concept?
Yeah, I think that was probably the biggest hurdle. And I have to be honest, I think if I wasn't doing RiffTracks, at least to start with, I would have been skeptical about how that would work. But it's surprisingly easy and effective. If I can do it, than most intelligent people can do it. And it works pretty well. And the more we go on, the more we're trying to kind of make it easier to roll it together.
Although I'm a little...
Just to people who don't... Sorry, go ahead.
Please go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, to people who don't know what the original impetus for RiffTracks is and what we still do mostly, it's Mystery Science Theater-like commentary on, movies that we couldn't do back in the day because we couldn't get the rights for. And a lot of the impetus for that was during our last couple of seasons, we did a few blockbuster specials for like the big action movies coming up over the summer, or Oscar nominee specials, where we would just take the press kits of the movie that they were giving out and riff those and make a half-hour special of them. And people responded really well to that and were saying, why can't you just do the new movies? And the answer was always, well, you'd have to pay $18 billion to get the movies. So this solved that problem.
Now, I'm a little concerned as a fan and participant of the Riff Tracks. We did Tron with you guys a little while back. That you may be backsliding. You are backsliding. You are holding...
Make your case, sir.
You are holding a live event that is going into movie theaters. And it concerns me that you're just leaving the technology behind and going straight to movie theaters. What's that all
about? We're joining the enemy. Yeah. We're joining that which we mock. Well, I think, some enterprising young bunch of riffers has got to get the tape of us doing that and then give us the business. It would be so meta.
But I'm referring to a week from today, if you happen to be listening to this as we're recording it, which of course you're not. You will be doing a live into theaters riffing of Plan 9 from Outer Space.
Yeah, it's very cool. I mean, it's basically live TV like they used to do in the 50s, only it's simulcast to I think at last count it was 434 theaters around the country. And we're doing Plan 9, that old Ed Wood movie, which we've done live a few times. We're also doing an old 1950s short about stewardesses, about training to be a stewardess. And it's called Flying Stewardess, by the way. So, it's not about a non-flying stewardess.
Now, that would be a real letdown, like sort of the how to be a stewardess on your boring days off, just...
Right, just walking around and picking up groceries and
laundry. Right,
and it's an extravaganza as much as we'll ever have an extravaganza. Anyway, it's 2 hours long, and we're going to do the short. And Veronica Belmont of Techzilla and Core is hosting, and your partner Jonathan Colton is going to be a musical guest. Mm-hmm. And there's stuff some. Like commercial parodies and stuff by Rich Lotex Kianka of somethingawful.com. Mm-hmm. So it's jam packed. But yeah, we'll get back to the real business soon.
Okay,
I promise.
I feel comforted now. So
I'm all about comforting people.
Because I worry. I worry. now, are you comfortable? Like, can I get you some nachos? I mean, I know we're not actually in the same room, but. There are no real...
Yeah, fax a whole bunch of nachos over, would you?
Sure, I'll take care of that. So at this point, I have a bunch of topics written down that we could or could not talk about. Is there anything on your mind at the moment? Not to put you on the spot. I'm not putting you on the spot.
No, you're not. I mean, we talked about this a little before, and I said one thing that always interests me, especially... when I think about you and Paul and Jonathan, is life on the road.
Yeah.
You guys spend a lot of time on the road, and, I'm a couple of years older than you, and I've used to do theater pretty seriously maybe 10 or 15 years ago, and that's probably the most I traveled, was going from theater to theater that was doing my plays. But it's really pales in comparison to what you guys do. You're true nomads at times.
Certainly in our minds, we are always nomads. I like that, the nomad mentality. I think that might be the lead candidate for the title of this podcast at this point. Yeah, I'd say it actually did surprise me. We were talking earlier before the podcast. And I think
during one of our aborted beginning podcasts.
Yeah, there are actually 5 hours of recorded material for what is going to be a 30-minute podcast.
That's right. It's like when they found the tapes of the Beatles, the Apple tapes.
That's one of my secret wishes, you know, like, we don't edit this podcast, but we do have a lot of like little bits and pieces at the beginning and end and stuff like that, that maybe someday we might reach that level of notoriety that people would seek these things out.
Some guy from the New Yorker will come, you know, rifling through every file and write a book about it.
Yeah, I guess it'd be a little disturbing if like they did that while you were still producing things, but I guess it's only with the gift of hindsight that they realized that you know, crumb that you dropped on the table was significant.
Exactly.
But the road, yeah. It surprised me that you hadn't spent more time on the road. But pull on up. What do you want to know about the road?
I am definitely in the world of comedy, but I've never seriously done stand-up comedy.
Yeah.
And I think even Mike Nelson, while he actually did some stand-up comedy, but it was really only a period of a couple of years and pretty regional. I mean, it was the Minneapolis sort of Midwest scene, probably going down to Chicago and up again, not beyond that. And then he got snagged by Mystery Science Theater.
Yeah.
So and Kevin's never done stand-up. I mean, he's done a little bit of music himself, but so we're interested and fascinated and it's at times slightly intimidated by your lifestyle.
Well, I'll say that...
You vagabonds, you.
Oh, yeah. We've got the whole sack on the stick thing. They give you one of those when you first head out on the road.
Are you issued a bindle, an official bindle?
We were. And John Hodgman himself actually knighted us with our hobo names. So
he'd be the one, yeah.
But the road is not the road is not the road. Like you, you mentioned stand-up comic. We do play a mix of theaters and folk clubs and comedy rooms. And I'd say if your experience on the road, what you've seen is the comedy world. That's about as tough as it gets.
Yeah, and that's kind of what sent me packing, you know, pretty quickly.
It's hard.
It didn't seem healthy.
No, and it just sort of. Just in the format of how they do it, just the type of crowds you're in front of, it can be very energy draining. It can be invigorating at times, but most of the time, unless you're one of the big names, people are not necessarily coming out to see you. They're coming out maybe just to get a laugh or to get drunk or to, you know, to yell at someone.
Absolutely. And to yell at... person who happens to be you at the moment.
Yeah.
Well, I should say that I know a couple of stand-up comics who do pretty well and seem quite well adjusted and are success anywhere from kind of successful to very successful, and they just seem to have the constitution to make it work.
Yeah.
Paul F. Tompkins comes to mind. I mean, I know he does a lot of stuff on the road, but he's a very funny, very nice guy, and... nobody handed that to him, but he just said some kind of cast iron constitution to handle that early stuff that was probably not much fun.
Yeah, I imagine you have to have a lot of the same survival skills as like a high school or junior high teacher. Just sort of that.
Yeah.
Or riding Broncos. Kind of the same. Blend those two together and you might have the stand-up comic fortitude.
Yeah. Well, what do you think is different about what you guys do?
Well, when you play music venues, it's more of a free agency thing. There isn't like comics. It's almost like these different levels of minor leagues and then the majors, where there's a set format. People are going to come out to the comedy clubs just for comedy. Whereas with the type of thing that we do and that Jonathan does, it's more about you've built your audience and then you're finding the right match of a venue for them to come out to see you.
Yeah.
And then there's a level even beyond that, which is when you've been successful long enough or doing the right thing. It's sort of the arts market where you have people that have subscriptions that are going to fill up a lot of the crowd no matter what, and then people who come to see you. And you guys, I could see you would get to skip over a number of those minor leagues because you have such a, you know, a solid fan base. And
it's the magic of TV, I think.
Well,
for good or evil.
I say for good, and
I hope so in our case.
And it's there's been that life to it, and with I guess your event coming up with Plan 9 from Outer Space is actually being conducted in Nashville. Is that correct?
Yeah. That's an odd little facet to the whole thing, but it really was it's kind of based on the company we're partnering with, Fathom Events, and they have just kind of started this whole thing. It seems like it's not very new technology to me, to this untrained person, because I remember when I was a kid they used to do professional heavyweight fights in movie theaters or simulcast them live.
Yeah, I remember that.
But I know that they've made a whole new given it a whole new life, and I saw the This American Life, the Ira Glass show, the NPR show did that a couple of months ago, and it was really quite good. It was gave you the feeling of being there, and it was really well produced.
Now, I just thought of something. You were asking me about the experience of being on the road.
Mm-hmm.
And what I would ask you is, like, when you're on the road and when you're in front of audiences, you get this very direct feedback. And when travel is tough and meals are bad and weather is rotten, the thing that will usually pull you out of it is just a great crowd. You have that moment where you just feel a connection. For as long as you did and were involved with Mystery Science Theater 3000, what was it like? Like, how much do you rely on feedback? And then with television, like, now it's a lot easier with forums and all the different methods online, Twitter, to get that feedback. How did you sustain yourself feedback-wise?
Well, I think Mystery Science Theater really grew up with the internet, and I think our fan base were really early adopters. And so we kind of had access to it before the big wave hit, I think. So we actually did print out feedback and look over it, and sometimes we didn't like what we saw, but it was always illuminating. And sometimes it made us huff and puff a little bit, but there was always useful stuff, I thought.
Oh, the 10-minute mark and I was 7 minutes ago.
What's that? Oh, 10-minute mark was 7 minutes ago.
Yeah, just a regular thing.
I'm talking too much, aren't I?
No, that's why you're here.
It's me.
That's why you are here.
But now, you're right. I mean, there are so many ways of telling us, your opinion, that the signal-to-noise ratio, you have to watch that.
Yeah.
But I still think it's worth it, because if not, you kind of... You can miss something big, I think, if you don't try to get at least an aggregate feeling of how your stuff's being received.
Yeah.
I think.
No, I agree with you. And Twitter, I think, is now that it's maturing, it's becoming a good conduit for a lot of that, not just the feedback, but as an engagement tool with. With fans and for finding new ones, which if you are a podcast listener, I imagine most of you folks out there also are Twitterers. And of course,
there's one more ER there, Storm.
I tend to do that.
Twitterers.
I don't like standard English. I know it very well, and it bothers me to read bad grammar.
It's just been done, the standard English thing.
Yeah, exactly. Like, we all know the word the so well that it can use some spice now and then.
Exactly.
While we're sort of talking about, like creative projects in general and the creative life, this is a question that Paul and I both like to ask folks, and we may have asked you in one of our encounters along the way, but this time it's going to be recorded. What is the worst creative project you can recall that you were involved in?
And this, well, there's a sunny slant on things.
I could have gone flip side, but, you know.
Oh, my God. God, how many can I mention here?
As many as you like.
It's an embarrassment of riches. I would have to say, I'm sort of flailing here because I'm feeling this great well of first of all, I think I should probably mention something where I was the creative force instead of my natural petty instinct, which is something that I was involved with there. I thought somebody else kind of screwed the pooch on.
Well, let's see. Let's see what you're made of, Bill Corbett.
Let's see. Do I have any moral fiber? Well, I did, I think, a pretty pretentious play or two in my time.
Play or like one-man show?
Well, I've done both. Although I think the one man, I've only written one serious one man show that I'm actually pretty fond of. Mm-hmm. I wrote a very pretentious play once, and there was a part of me that kind of knew it while it was happening. And my tendency is to be, try to be funny and to even be silly and not to get too political. And I think I broke every one of these rules in this one. And it was because I was in the world of theater at the time. And, that's kind of how you get taken seriously. I mean, it's how you nail those NEA grants and stuff.
Yeah.
is to have a good patter about your, how important your stuff is. So I tried to be important and I think it's fair to say that I more than failed.
So you felt
much less important.
So if it were the
I'm sorry.
If it were the rock and roll world, someone talked you into wearing the tight leather pants, and they just weren't
yes.
your style.
I did an Emerson, Lake and Palmer album, where it was like Keith Emerson's Piano Concerto Number 3.
Yeah. Well, that would be an interesting. Sorry, you said Emerson, Lake and Palmer, and I kind of jolted over to a Yes, and how they would.
Oh, we're in the same neighborhood there.
Oh, yeah, the whole prog rock, and remember reading, I think it was a book on producers and sound production, and how they would compose their albums, as each of them would have been, high somewhere for some period of time, and then they'd come together in the studio and probably get high some more, and then almost like the kids game where you would take turns sentence by sentence building a story. They would sit around and be like, okay, and then the drums kick in and they do this bap 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 bap. And it made me think of maybe that would be a way to go with theater.
Yeah, I mean, and
just throwing that
as
out
long
there.
As you got as long as you got a little midget jester in there, think you will have nailed the genre.
So,
well, just to button up this thing about being on the road, what's interesting to me about what you guys do, I've seen you in a bunch of venues now.
Yeah.
And just over the last couple of years, in different cities, in fact, and you guys collectively are certainly going to bigger places and better places.
Yeah.
But I see I'm not sure if we said this in the podcast or before, but you mentioned how it's a little, you get a little bit of cognitive dissonance going from one place where, it may be not be the best fit or the best town, the best fit of town yet.
Yeah.
And then you go to another place and you're just conquering heroes. I think the last time we saw you guys was in, was in Solana Beach.
Yeah, yeah.
A pretty nice place, but probably not, you know, your like dead center and your, you know, the wheelhouse for you guys.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think you went, you recorded a riff tracks with us the next day, and then like the day after that, you went up to LA, and it was basically, you know, Caesar coming back to Rome, wasn't it?
Oh my God! Well, there was really. The LA experience was really singular for, I think, all of us. Just a lot of the people that we either know who are biz people and other folks, just the number of people who are in LA that are doing creative things is just off the charts. And a lot of them came to the show that night, and the vibe in LA when you have a big crowd is just, I hate the cliche, the crowd was electric, but it almost was like there was a very thick liquid that surrounded you and extended out into the audience, and that if you woggled your arms around, you could send those vibrations directly through this thick liquid, and they would liquid you back. That was my attempt of using a metaphor that was not electricity to describe what
so liquid electricity is what I'm hearing.
Yeah, or sort of like they say, light is both a particle and a wave. That it was
yes. Well, you guys caused an earthquake.
Yes, we did. It was during our
you
opening
bastards.
Song. I know we are the destructors. But I'll certainly say that the increase in venue size has much more to do with Jonathan than with us. But that it is there's still variations in the venue sizes, and that you just sort of learn to roll with the crowd that's in front of you.
Yeah, well, I thought you guys did a brilliant job at Solana Beach where, you know, I think there were plenty of people there because they're just super fans of you guys, but it was also a big bar. The space was a little bit unfocused, I think it's fair to say.
Yep.
But you kind of wrestled it into submission, the whole thing. There was also a lot of drunk people, as I recall. I think one of them was Kevin Murphy.
That's a good thing. Actually, most of the time, the crowds are not particularly drunk, but I think there was a sizable chunk of the people there that were just sort of local.
Yeah, they just show up to drink and play darts and, you know, stand on the periphery of the music and check it out.
Yeah, which is actually kind of rare for when we're riding shotgun with Jonathan out there, is that you get the rabid fan base that increasingly knows our material as well. But venues are often surprised by it. Like the audience does not look like any other audience that comes out to their venues a lot of the time. And they don't say that in a derisive way, just that, wow, this is kind of neat. That you have these well-ordered people who are really paying attention to the show.
You have opposable thumbs.
Exactly. There's not a lot of that in the business, which is what gives us our competitive edge. And, wow. Well, I'm feeling pretty good here. I don't want to keep you for too long.
Well, thanks, Storm. It's been great talking to you.
Thank you for being here for the Paul and Storm Enterprise. And again, folks, of course, if you have not already checked out rifftracks.com, do so now.
And check out Paul and Storm and Jonathan on rifftracks.com.
That's right.
They substituted for us, and we slacked off for a few days.
You know what? Okay, we're not done. I think we talked about this in a previous podcast, but just how much harder it is to do riffing than you might imagine. I mean, of course, you wouldn't think that it would be just like this, where there's no plan and it just kind of goes along. But just the pace, when you realize there's something happening all the time. And,
yeah, it is a bit of a runaway train. I will say that the hardest part has always been, and always will be, the writing.
Mm-hmm.
But and that, you know, and that's something we just, you just have to put in the time and hope for the best.
Yep.
But you guys were amazingly good at the performing part. And I know it, you know, it was a bit, it's a grueling, or at least takes a lot of energy in the hour and a half, 2 hours in the recording booth. But boy, you guys were just aces. I mean, you kind of, you didn't flub many lines and you had lots of energy and you found new ways of attacking your jokes. It was really cool to see.
Well, thank you. Probably helps that, you know, the three of us have been performing together for a little bit. And
well, yeah, well, that's what we kind of thought. I mean, we didn't think that going in, but afterwards we were like, wow, they're tight. That's a tight group, those guys.
Well, it really was an awesome, and all three of us were completely geeking out before, during, and after. So thank you for that.
Well, shucks, it was fun.
All right, well, go to paulandstorm.com to find out where we're going to be coming up, because there are a lot of new places that are getting added every 5 minutes, so I'm not going to announce them now. Also find out there about how to join the Paul and Storm Brigade of Minions. Now, in honor of Bill Corbett's guesting, and we didn't talk about this before, Bill, but I want your okay before I say this for sure. If you sign up this week to be a minion, you will get the designation, if Bill agrees, to be in the Corbot Corps.
Oh, my goodness. I'm beyond honored.
So that's a little extra incentive. If you've been thinking about joining the brigade, go to paulandstorm.com. I sound like a public television pitch. But let's go with that.
A bitch.
Did I slip the wrong consonant into there? I'm sorry. Anyway, and the way we close this out is...
you said pitch. I'm sorry.
I did.
I actually thought you said... But then, boy, that was harsh.
No. I'm a nice guy.
Jim Lehrer is a bitch?
Good Lord. Anyway...
Please continue.
Oh, well, the continue is the end. I'm Storm.
And I'm Bill.
And we've been talking about some stuff for 5 to 10 minutes on average. At this point, Paul would just think of a phrase straight off the top of his head, which you can do.
Simian goodness.
Nice. And then I say, go do things.
It's a little Rorschach test, isn't it? I could stop recording.
Salutatorian, and I've received a grant for further research. My grades were less than great. My looks will not seduce thee. If I could get a chance to take Julian's place and be alone with Madeline in Spain.